Negotiations on a post-Brexit free trade deal between the UK and Australia have hit a last-minute hitch. British farmers are up in arms at the prospect of competing with Australian imports that they claim don't meet UK standards, meat imports in particular. Earlier this morning, I spoke with John Davies. He's a beef and lamb producer and president of the National Farmers Union in Wales. He says his members are prepared to walk away from the table.
I think this campaign has got fairly rough on both sides, really. And when it comes to getting to a deal, perhaps you need to think about compromising, because if you push us too far, you know, we will stand and fight. And I'm afraid we're in that position now, you know. I think your negotiating team are really, really robust. They're really aggressive. So what we've got to have here is some sort of a level playing field approach. If you want to go for everything, you may not get anything.
That's John Davies from Britain's National Farmers Union. We spoke to him earlier. Negotiators are rushing to try to ink this deal by next month ahead of the G7 meeting. But there are fears that it could miss that deadline because of the tensions, not just amongst the farm federations, but within Boris Johnson's cabinet as well. Fiona Simpson is the president of the National Farmers Federation here in Australia. Fiona, welcome back to Breakfast.
Thanks, Fran.
You heard John Davies there. He says British farmers can't compete with Australian producers if it's not a level playing field. He said our farmers, if they get zero tariff access to the UK, it will be unfair. And the president of the British Farmers Federation, Manette Batters, says the deal would throw British family farms under the bus. What do you think?
Well, clearly they're mounting a massive campaign. Well,
clearly they're worried, I think.
Clearly they're worried, and their job is to stick up for their farmers. And you've got to remember that in this instance, you know, the UK has been tied to the hip of the EU for many, many years, and they're now wanting to stand on their own and to negotiate trade deals. And look, when I was listening to John Davies, I actually was finding myself agreeing with so many of the things that he was saying. He was talking about the importance of family farms, the importance of his community, the importance of his farmers. And when we were over in the UK not that long ago, really, before COVID, that was the thing that we heard too from the farmers. But they also wanted innovation. They also wanted to become more competitive. They also wanted and the access to markets that we have here in Australia now. I think our beef is delivered to something like 50 markets, Fran. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, now that's the sort of thing that we can work together on. We've got some big challenges ahead of us when we're talking about climate change, when we're talking about sustainability, and sustainability not just in the environmental sense, but also in terms of what agriculture looks like in the future and making money for these communities and these farmers. So these are things that I would say to John, look, and I have reached out to my colleague Manette, we really need to work together on these things, and the way to do that is a level playing field where we have we can all compete on the same terms. We are a long way from the UK. It's a very small market for us, and really that's all that this is about, is working together.
Well, what they say it's about is that very question of what agriculture looks like, because it looks different in the UK. John was speaking to us from a small village in Wales with six houses in the village, very small family farms, and they're comparing that to the huge pastoral holdings in Australia. They also, Manette Batters, your counterpart, is taking some, you know, is giving some pretty strong criticism over farming practices here, accusing livestock producers of running massive feedlots, soulless ranches, and also flagging the use of hormones here as an issue. Said the use of hormones is banned in the UK. So they're really suggesting that we have some problems that amount to advantages that would not be countenanced in the UK. Is that true?
No, look, I'm not going to get into a he said, she said thing here. I think certainly not going to do it on your show, Fran. And I think that this is a job for the negotiators, because we know that there is a win-win here, and trade agreements are about both countries winning. And you know, I'm actually coming to you this morning from Darwin, which everybody knows how far away that is from the rest of Australia. But in actual fact, normally otherwise I'd be coming from you from my farm in Prem. Where we're fighting to keep the local school, where we're fighting to keep the local pub active, where we have lost so many people in our small community as well. So I think we so often focus on the differences, but this is actually, and we know that our industry in Australia, our agricultural, yes, we're different to the Northern Hemisphere, very different. Yes, we're very different to the UK, but that can also turn into benefits for both sides.
Okay.
And I think in this case, you know, that's what we're saying to to the UK. There's a famous saying over there, keep calm and carry on. I think actually we need to be both really looking at, and I'm sure there's been, the, you know, negotiation is the art of compromise. I'm sure there's been lots of compromise along the way.
Okay.
But this is a good step forward for the UK farmers, and this is a great step forward for us if we can actually get back to the relationship that we had well before the EU came along.
Okay, just before I a couple of issues I need to get to here, but I also want to leave some time to go to borders and the agricultural workforce, which is important, I know. But just on that issue of compromising, you heard John Davies there saying Australian farmers should think about compromising. Australian farmers prepared to cop some level of tariffs and quotas in a free trade deal?
Well, you know, he also said that he wanted a level playing field. So a level playing field is where everybody does, you know, the industry competes on its merits. And the reality
so that's
is,
a no?
here, is that, well, the, it's up totally up to the negotiators at the end of the day, Fran. But we do, through the WTO and others, pursue a level playing field in every trade agreement that we go into. And we don't, you know, we're not always successful. You know, he spoke earlier about precedents too. And I can say that doesn't always apply either. Mm. We're not always able to get the same terms as some of the other countries in the world.
So how much do you think their concerns are about precedents? Because Australia's this is deal with Australia is the first one off the box post Brexit, so it's got a lot of symbolism attached to it. But of course, there might be bigger deals and bigger bogeys coming down the tunnel at British farmers. You know, US farmers bigger in number and closer. Brazil. Do you think that's they're more worried about that?
Well, maybe they are, but if that's the case, they really need to be talking to their governments and talking to their negotiators. And Australia is very, very friendly, a great partner of the UK, and we certainly were a strong trading partner before. We hope we will be again. And really, I think if that's the case, that's what they should be focusing on. And, you know, get this, you know, I think this is going to be a great way for the UK and a great first deal for the UK coming out of the EU.
Okay.
But then again, that's a decision for them. We look forward to working with them more. We think we've got lots of things we can work on together. We're old friends, so we really would like to get this one done, and we'd really welcome being the first one.
What would it mean? It's not a massive deal in terms of the volume of beef and lamb likely to go into the UK. But so, what would it mean? What would it be worth for Australian farmers?
Look, I'm not sure of the dollar figure, Fran, but the way we're approaching trade now since the EU, to be honest, is that we like a lot of markets. We like that diversification. And each market could deliver something special to an individual producer. The UK is a very, very long way from Australia. We have Asia right on our doorstep. It's, you know, unlikely that it would ever be any much more than a niche product taker.
Okay.
But by the same token, it is yet another market. It's a market that we know our produce, you know, has appeal to consumers, and we think that the UK produce likewise has appeal here. So that's, you know, it's a quid pro quo.
Okay. Can I just ask you before we go about borders, because this is critical for the agriculture industry, who are suffering a workforce shortage. And, you know, last year when we spoke to a range of farmers, they were saying it would be a real problem if borders didn't open soon. They're not going to open soon. Mid-next year is now what the government's saying. Are you worried about that? And could we be doing more? We've already got some agricultural workers coming in and being quarantined in South Australia and Menmark quite successfully. Should that model be rolled out across, you know, for more workers in more places?
Yes, it's a real problem, and yes, we hope to be doing more, and we hope the governments will be doing more. We sometimes feel a little bit like the meat in the sandwich between the states and the federal government on this issue. At the end of the day, we do need a visa that is going to allow workers to come in and be very flexible. We need to work out a way during this COVID crisis to get them in safely. With vaccinations, that's hopefully offering some opportunities, but we also need to look at the risk opposed by, you know, the different risk assessments with different lengths of quarantine, for example, and how we do that. And some states have been quite flexible, but it does get frustrating when we then have to, you know, take it back to the state-by-state approach as opposed to a national approach.
Should we have federal leadership on this?
I think the feds, you know, it's very tricky to work out. One side says something and one side says something else. So at the end of the day, the state health ministers, I think, are in charge of their quarantine arrangements, which is one of the sticking points here. So we want to keep people safe. We absolutely want to keep workers safe, but we also need to make sure that we can have a supply of workforce starting to come in, particularly under some of our aid schemes like the Pacific Island scheme, the seasonal worker program, Fran.
Look, just briefly and finally, the mouse plague is causing major problems for large parts, as you know, New South Wales and southern Queensland, making its way down to South Australia and Victoria. New South Wales, we heard this morning, has brought thousands of litres of poison to, quote, napalm the rodents. How safe is this chemical bombardment?
Well, I think that's some colourful language by the New South Wales Ag Minister there, who's prone to that. But I also think that we can be very comfortable in Australia, that we have very, very strong, and this is, you know, harks back to the trade example, Fred, very strong assessment of the chemicals that we use. And so we have to put our faith in the science, faith in the regulators, make sure they're doing their job, not get too carried away with our colourful language. At the end of the day, we have, you know, mice now absolutely in plague proportions, causing huge havoc in our houses, in our hospitals in regional Australia, in our shops, in our businesses, on our farms. And we do have to find a way to treat them and stop them. And we don't want to create any angst, but we have a great regulatory system for that.
Let's hope so. Fiona Simpson, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks, Fran.
Fiona Simpson is the president of the NFF.